All right, welcome everyone to another episode of Behind the Human. I'm your host, Mark Champagne. It's my job to unpack the stories and mental fitness practices of people living at the top of their game personally and professionally. Today we are jamming with Zach in person, which is a special treat on this show. So the audio might be a little bit different, but we've got Zach from Northern Rays. He's the CEO and co-founder of Northern Rays Meats, a company on a mission to create a closer connection to our food source and to think consciously about the quality of our food, what's really in it, where it comes from, and its impact on our climate and local economy. Plus, he's just a stand-up awesome dude. So Zach, welcome to the show.
Man, incredibly grateful. Thanks for welcoming into your space. This is fun to do in person. Long overdue.
Yeah, I can't wait. I mean, there's been a... When's the last time I did an in-person? One last year. And there's just something, I mean, energetically with obviously being in front of another human, that, you know, it's hard to replicate that through Zoom or all the different recording software and whatnot.
Yeah.
So it's an honor. Yeah.
Likewise.
Okay. Before we get into all things food and well-being, health, nutrition, all that fun jazz, you get the same question that everyone gets. That's who are you?
Yeah, I think, you know, how I show up in the world, I have a few different hats. You mentioned as a business guy, you know, I'm a father to two beautiful young boys. I think as a human, I'm a person that's in pursuit of trying to be a better version of myself every day, a person that is trying to, I think, achieve the highest calling that I know, which is to know myself. And so when you ask me, who am I?
The big one.
Yeah. You know, I think I'm asking that question of myself every day. And that's a lot of what defines my life right now is introspection and somebody who cares deeply about, you know, being in a life worth living. And so, yeah, a lot of different hats that I wear and ways that I can show up. But that, to me is who I am at this moment.
When did that journey into, let's just call it introspection, really begin for you? Or were you always really kind of tuned in to what you just described and asking those kind of questions, you know, for your life?
I think by nature, I've always had a curiosity around how to become a better version. I've always loved to emulate people of success and, you know, kind of chase those types of pursuits, right? But, you know, for me, there's certainly been an intentional chapter of my life, say over the past 7 or 8 years. And certainly, as we were talking about a little bit earlier before the podcast, like, you know, things like fatherhood, you know, really amplify that. And so I think they're chapters, right? I think inherently maybe a natural curiosity, you know, to turn inwards and see what I can discover about myself. But then there are life moments, chapters, seasons of life where, you know, the volume gets turned up a little bit and all of a sudden then, you know, you have a little bit more of an intentional mode of how to explore, you know, parts of yourself. So
who were some of those early mentors either that you knew or that from afar or potentially even kind of passed away? Like were there some people that come to mind just intuitively that were like good beacons for you that you're studying?
I was very fortunate in my personal realm to be exposed to men and women that were always in pursuit of betterment of themselves, of their businesses, of their families, of their faith. And so I think I benefited from the osmosis of that. And I'm incredibly grateful for that. You know, we were talking a little bit earlier about fathers and you and I being young fathers, like, you know, my father, I certainly, he was a titan in my world and I looked up to him and still do. And many others, I think like that, again, very fortunate to just be in proximity of good quality humans. I've taken my time to, you know, study the greats, if you will, right? Big thinkers and, you know, guys with big ideas in the world. But, I think there's no more beautiful experience than to have somebody practically, you know, living it in front of you. Right. Yeah. And so, yeah, I consider myself very fortunate to have been in the presence of a lot of great men and women.
Well, I imagine we met one of those people today, you know, one of your early kind of bosses and whatnot. And it just, you know, what strikes me about the conversation we had with, this is a gentleman owns a local business here, but has had, you know, been involved and started other companies as well. And we're sitting there chatting with him and he's like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing, you know? And like, this is someone that you would look at and be like, wow, he's done really well for himself. And he has, but here he is on a new journey and like scared, you know, in a way, but still going for it. Right. Yeah. And like, that's powerful stuff. Right. Cause like we're on those paths as well. We're like a lot of us are just trying to figure this stuff out and whatnot. Right.
Yeah. I think you're absolutely correct. And I mean, I appreciate your, I admire the way that you kind of create a space for some of that vulnerability to come through in your work, but also as a person, right. Because I think that's really valuable is to acknowledge that we're all under construction to some degree, no matter how much, you know, we want to say that we've got our shit together. And I think that there's a world out there that really incentivizes us to show the highlight reel, right? Yeah. And to live in that kind of space. But when you really touch down with, I think, highly successful people, they are individuals that are constantly evolving. And I think that's a very common theme. They're the most successful people I know are people that continue to evolve constantly. And it may take different shapes or forms. And you meet somebody that's like, wow, you really got your shit together. Well, no, you know, they're still under construction. Yeah. They may have figured some things out and you want to hold true to, you know, some of those practices and wisdom as you grow. But the malleability to always be in that learner's mindset and to be pursuing, you know, growth within yourself. I think that's a really common trait in a lot of highly successful, you know, people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how did it all begin? What's, you know, cause your path from what I can see, there was a good amount of time in sales and like logistics, which I imagine was quite helpful for what you're doing right now. Knowing a little bit about that business in Northern Rays. But like, how did that all come about?
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I think my journey through the corporate world and into Northern Raised was one of, the dichotomy between what I was told was objectively successful and the path to get to objective success. And then my relationship with it and, I think coming to an understanding of what now I see as like a more purpose-built life. And so I think for me, there was this path sort of set out that said, there's a corporate ladder, if you will, just to kind of use a general analogy, like there's a corporate ladder out there that you can climb. Here's how you do it. It is based on a very aggressive take at an ultra performance-based, profit-driven environment. Succeed there and you will succeed in life. And I don't knock that capitalistic, you know, driven rise and grind kind of approach at all. I know it is objectively successful for many. What I found was that when I had reached a level of success and climbed that ladder and objectively done well in that world, that I found myself at a place of disconnection, burnout, mental health challenges, you know, and just, I think the most distant from who I was as an individual, going back, like, who are you? Who am I? I found myself very, very far away. If you had asked me that, you know, going back 5, 6, 7 years ago, I would have been very distant from the answer of that question if I were to have, you know, answered that honestly. So, I think that's where it began for me, right? Was just this feeling of the system that I thought was meant to perpetuate my success left me in a place of, you know, despair, quite honestly.
Yeah.
Left me in a pretty low spot.
So then what questions were you asking yourself around that time?
For me, the word purpose was one that kept coming up and still comes up for me, is living a purpose-built life and living in alignment with purpose. And so I think I spent a lot of those introspective moments trying to ask myself these questions around, like, what is my purpose? The thing that I have created does not serve me. I'm aware of that, right? So I think that first step of awareness, right, was asking a lot of questions just about environment and about myself. And I was also in a place where, you know, mentally, physically was not well, right? Suffered with crippling anxiety at the time. I was very fortunate to be a high functioning individual. You may have not seen it externally, but internally was fighting demons.
Okay.
And so asking a lot of questions about, you know, the viability of the path that I had chosen. Meanwhile, the external reinforcement and the external world was congratulating me, right? It's like, hey, you're a vice president in your late 20s. You're working for a multinational corporation. You have a travel budget and a life on the road and a credit card and all these things that, you know, somehow we point to as successful. And all those things were true in that moment. But again, the internal dialogue was something much different and asking questions around, you know, what is my purpose, what is in alignment with my life. And then I think the process of like, how do you literally take one step out the door? Like how do you well, put that was one gonna foot be my in front
question.
Of the other?
Like, cause you could ask those questions, which many people don't do. So that's, you know, a big step, but then there's another huge step of almost harder because it's like you have the answers and now you really know that you're not aligned or there's something off, let's just say. But you have to do something about it. So like what was that next step? Like how did Northern Rays come to be? Or was there a step in between to leave, basically pause the autopilot of the life that you were on and make that subtle shift? Well, maybe not so subtle, make the shift, I guess.
Yeah. I think when you live out of alignment with life, life will give you a certain amount of time of grace period. Some of us, it's short. Some of us can last years and years and years in a state of being out of alignment. For me, the tree got shook pretty hard again with mental health, with physical health. Right. And so I found myself at a place where necessity required me to take a step to act. Right. And so for me, it was getting back to the basics. So, you know, I would find myself after lengthy business trips or huge seasons of work, checking myself into a doctor's office and saying like, I think I'm dying. Like what is this? Right.
Yeah. What was the feel like? What were you feeling? What were the,
for me, a lot of the stress manifested, physically in just an inability to ever take a full breath to feel like I was ever present. Like I would spend days and wouldn't be able to tell you a conversation that I'd had, like no recollect. I'd black out, you know, I'd black out and here I'd be presenting to large groups of people or leading, you know, teams and things like that. And I wouldn't be able to tell you like where I was or, you know, how, and just physically wrecked me, right?
My, sounds
my
terrifying.
Gut and my breath and all these things. And so, yeah, like I say, there was this very practical kind of application to, okay, you are in a state of disarray. Like, how are you going to put one foot in front of the other here and crawl yourself out? And the solutions at the time, honestly, Mark, were not ones that I felt, they were band-aids. You know, it was like, hey, take this pill, right? Call us if it doesn't work, right? And I just remember being at a point where I looked at that solution and said, not for me, not ever. I will find another way. And that began that journey of like, you know, a foot in front of the other, get back to some of the very basics, the tenets of health that I could, you know, think of. And now they come as very obvious to me and probably to you as well, but you know, just things like movement and rest and recovery. And then most intentionally and where Northern Raised came into the picture was what I was consuming, right? What I was putting in my body. And the more that I brought intention and awareness to what I was consuming, the more I healed myself. And I started to reinform my body at a biological level, but that, you know, flowed into an emotional and a spiritual output as well. That when I inform my body with good quality food and good quality nutrition, I was able to heal myself, right? And so that was very much kind of the actionable part of my journey was a very get back to basics approach, one foot in front of the other, and then discovering really, really powerful tools, things like breath work. We talked a little bit about mental, you know, fitness practices, you know, and using the breath to prime and set, you know, set up your emotional state. And that was, you know, very, very impactful for me, among many others.
How long did that take until you started to, like, as you made, you know, some like you said, fundamental changes, but was there, like, when did you start feeling the effects of that?
So I would challenge anybody to sit down in a state of stress or not even, but to sit down, take 30 deep breaths and tell me you don't feel different about 30 seconds after that.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are the immediate feedback. And I think that's one of the coolest things about some of these tools that are available to all of us right now, no matter what state you're in. And you know this well in the mental fitness world, like to be able to change that state instantaneously with something as powerful as the breath. And then there were the longer term things, right? Like when a body has been under a state of stress for, you know, a lengthy period of time, there is a rebuilding and a reprogramming that needs to happen. And not to even touch the avenues of trauma or deeply programmed stuff. Like where does that stuff inherently come from? And all those big questions, whole other mousetrap.
Present stuff.
Yeah.
The current. Yeah.
Yeah. So like the little things about state changes, and this is the cool thing I think about what I discovered about food was that I could change my state simply by not consuming processed foods. And that is an instantaneous feedback loop for me, right? To say, oh, I didn't have my stop at Tim Hortons today. I didn't have the third coffee of the day. I didn't have 3 to 4 beers to close off my evening. Like those things created immediate feedback loops that I didn't have to wait for some sort of delayed gratification of like healing my inner trauma or anything like that. We'll get to that, you know, like that's, you know, but I found these tools that provided immediate feedback to a response and a state that I was hopeful to achieve. I was trying to find balance. And I think all of us are trying to, you know, on a journey to try to find some state of balance. And those were just things that were providing that instantaneous response.
It's wild. I mean, you can probably pick this up from just knowing me personally. And then even today in our chat and talking about our families, like we're on this side, like we're pretty intentional with what we eat and I'll give my wife full credit. Like she is the master cook in the house and like we eat pretty clean for the most part. But like many, I mean, last night's a perfect example, like whatever, what was the reason? The kids were out or something. They were out on a walk and it bled into regular, like preparing the meal time kind of thing. And now all of a sudden we found ourselves like with no time and we ended up ordering pizza. So, which is fine, but I'm wearing this Whoop right now and spoiler alert or preview, the VP of performance and science from Whoop's coming on in a few weeks. So
wow.
Kind of running my own little experiment. I woke up this morning and my recovery or my like readiness score for the day was in the shitter, like so bad, red kind of thing. And the only thing that was different than from the regular routine and all that, I still did my breath work. I did all the regular things, journaling, was that highly processed, let's just call it fake food. Like there's probably not much real in that takeout pizza. Like it's so obvious when you start, and you don't even have to track that. Like I woke up not feeling great.
Yeah.
Right. But now it's interesting to see the data and like, whoa, sharp, like spike downwards. So,
but we live in this system that would much rather that you wake up this morning feeling a little bit depleted, because what do you turn to when you're a little depleted? Well, you're going to stop at Starbucks, right?
Yeah.
You need that caffeine pick me up because you felt a little gross. Or maybe you're going to reach for the, you know, bottle of Tums on the counter. You're going to pop a couple of Tums.
Yeah.
Then you're going to probably go down and you're going to say, well, I'm feeling a little bit crappy right now. I need some energy for the day. You know what? I'm going to grab my favorite cereal out of the, you know, out of the pantry, because I don't have time for breakfast because I woke up a little bit late and I feel a little bit gross, right? And so you quickly see the compounding snowball effect of how one night of pizza leads into, you know, 3 to 4 cascades. Other bad decisions. And all of a sudden now we're at a place where, you know, we're nutrient depleted, a little bit sleep deprived, as young dads always are, right? And and so it's not to ever demonize pizza night with the family, right?
Yeah.
In no way, shape, or form are we saying that. But what you're talking about, and to use like a device like a Whoop bracelet or simply just be aware of the fact that you wake up this morning feeling a little bit less than your regular self, that level of awareness, I think, is where this journey starts. It's where it started for me. I think it's where it starts for many. And these are really simple tools that we can all implement in our daily lives. But then we have to do the difficult thing of aligning our decisions throughout the rest of the day and the next foot in front of the other to align with better choices. And I think that's what our system at large, the health system, the food mm-hmm. system, our well-being is not incentivized to do that. It is challenging, and the world makes it very difficult. Our environment makes it very difficult to make those good decisions so that we can find balance for the family pizza night.
Yeah. So I want to ask, because there's one thing to be intentional and intentional with what you're eating, and just you're obviously going down that path and journey and bringing in, you know, different exercise and stuff like that, a whole bunch of different practices, let's say. It's another thing to then start a business and go down that route. So like, help connect the dots there. What happened?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think as anything, there's an excitement about the newly converted, right? there's a zealousy about the newly converted. I found myself doing this deep dive on where my food came from, wanting the best quality food I could consume, sourcing it myself. And so I would drive out to farms and I would buy a half a cow, or I'd buy 10, 20, 30, 40 chickens at a time. And I would send it around to friends and family, because this was something that was so impactful at the time for my life, still is so impactful, that I wanted to share, right? You're so excited about the fact that you found a way to heal yourself. Why would you not want to share that? And so there was, I think, a point in time where it lived in a bit of a utopic type of, hey, we could just, you know, do this. And that was how I was going to live my life. And regardless of what came of Northern Raised in the long run, it would be the way that I would continue to live my life. I was fortunate in that I think I was asking big questions of myself at that time. And a part of that was, I'm discovering something beautiful about our food system. I feel like I need to take I'm having benefits from that. I feel like I need to contribute back. There needs to be some reciprocity. How can I be integral in this? How can I be more than just an act? Like, I want to be an active participant. I want to be an owner in this, right? Not only do I want to be an active participant in making decisions when I go to the farmer's market or the grocery store, but I felt that call to play a really integral role in creating something that allowed others to access the healing that I was experiencing. And so
there's that sense of purpose.
Yeah.
Strong. Yeah.
Yeah. And I evaluated the moments in my life that I think brought the most joy, brought the most intentionality, the times that I felt most lit up. And I realized that it all kind of revolved around this world of, you know, connecting people. And this is, I think, at the core of what Northern Raised is today. It's the ability to connect people with their personal well-being through the food on their plate. And I saw food as this really powerful, intimate vehicle that we have that I think is underplayed, misused, abused by many. And I thought, we can do something different with this.
I have a question about, I'd love to get some insight around just like things that have surprised you along the way with just connecting with farmers and whatnot. But before, just to set the context, what is Northern Raised?
So, as I mentioned, Northern Raised, a vehicle to bring natural food to people's doors. The way that that actually shows up is we run an e-commerce platform that connects people with local farmers here in Ontario. You can think of it a little bit like an online farmer's market where you can go on and select, you know, custom cuts of meat from local farms, and all under the tenet of farmers that are raising animals in a natural, sustainable, ethical, and local manner. So we try to hold all of our partnerships to an incredibly high standard in terms of how that food is produced. We connect consumers with the most transparency, access, trust that we can to really, truly understand where your food is coming from, remove the barriers that it takes to understand where that food is coming from in a system that does not want you to know.
Yeah.
That shows up in a farm box that we deliver right to your doorstep.
It is incredible. First of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
It's not easy to start any business, and it's it's beautiful to have people like yourself and your partner and the team to bring an idea to fruition, right? And continue every day to push forward and whatnot in something that, you know, truly benefits a lot of people, and the ripple effect of those families, right, that have good quality food, like it affects everything. And you and I experience this together, for me at least, in a very profound way when we were a part of a dinner, you know, an intentional dinner in Toronto. And there were many different partners involved, but there was a huge part around food and intentionality around that food. And I don't want to diminish, we had some like world-class chefs preparing that food as well. So let's just, you know, put that out there. But there was something so profound around knowing where that food was coming from, the preparation of it, but then where I was coming in from a mental fitness perspective and getting people to ask some pretty big questions, it was almost like the appetizer, like disarmed the group. And then all of a sudden the next course came in, and it's hard to describe, but the feeling was palpable, right? And I truly do believe a lot of that had to do with the quality of the food that you were supplying through Northern Raise. And of course, again, the preparation and all that, and then the energy of the group. But I mean, that's powerful. Like that we're not, you know, that's accessible to all of us.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Wild.
Yeah. 100%. No, I think food is a incredibly powerful, and not only is it biological information that informs our state and informs our body, it's energy. It holds in however you know, whatever level of woo-woo we want to go to.
About, we can go all the way up on this show.
Perfect. You know, food holds energy, and it transfers energy both biologically and metaphysically. And when you are in a state, and it pulls people together. Think of any party that you're at, where do people congregate? It's around the food, right? It is a powerful, powerful connection tool. And so, you know, beautifully said in terms of when you're asking, you know, if you're in the business of mental fitness and you're trying to prime an individual to ask the biggest questions of themselves and to get into who they are and what they care about and what they desire, why wouldn't you do all the things possible to make that, or to create a body and a mind that's receptive to, you know, information and creation and ideas and all that. And so, you know, I think food becomes a very essential part of that. I think it's how humans have shared community for decades, or decades, hundreds and thousands of years, and how humanity has kind of come together, shared stories, grown together, evolved together. And to have the preparation on top of it, to have a, you know, a 5-star meal doesn't hurt either. But this is a powerful tool that can be brought into your kitchen as well. It doesn't need to come necessarily with a Michelin star.
Yeah, exactly. But that's the thing, like, because we all eat, right? And I mean, there's some, like, I would fall under the camp of not being super excited about preparing food. My wife like loves doing that, but there's elements of it of that where I find a lot of gratitude and appreciation just slowing down and like really like smell the food, look at the food. Like ask where did it come from? You know, and even thank, like I do this with coffee often too, like these beans, you know, they've traveled. There were hands involved with like roasting those beans, and you know, just slowing down long enough to appreciate and have gratitude towards that also trains your mind to do that in all other areas of your life. So now all of a sudden, like your work and the other things that matter in your life, you catch yourself like seeing the detail that, you know, most don't see.
Yeah.
And that's a huge advantage.
Yeah.
Right.
I grew up in a house where we prayed for food, right? For every meal, prayer was a component. And growing up, I think I had a real misconception about what prayer was. I thought it was this big man in the sky and somehow we're thanking something. And it, you know, just there was a level of disconnect, and it was probably my own childhood naivety, right? But that act of prayer or gratitude or reflection, it does a number of incredible things not the least of which transference into mental fitness, how you live your life, right? And primes the rest of your life. But also, like, I mean, just at a biological, skip the woo for a second, at a biological level, taking a moment before you consume food or while you consume food to pause, reflect, you know, focus on what you're eating, slow down. That's all putting our body into a rest and digest state. It's allowing our bodies to exit out of a stress-filled, you know, consumption dumped environment that we're constantly under that pressure of. And our food should be a moment to rest and digest, because that's what our body needs. That's what our body requires, to take in that energy, repurpose it, and then dive back into the, you know, the cosmic soup of whatever you've got going on that day, right?
Yeah.
And if we could all use that as a little tool throughout the day, the moments that you do sit down to eat, don't grab your meal on the go, right? Don't stop at the drive-through, right? Stop for
yeah, make it a ritual.
Yeah. And pray or whatever word you want to use, right? Take a second and express that gratitude. Think back to the hands that have brought the food to your plate, the lives that, you know, have contributed to what you're consuming. I think that's such a beautiful practice. And to your point, I mean, it plays out into priming the rest of your life.
Yeah. What are just to help people get started on this journey, if like anything, I'd be surprised if nothing is resonating with people on the other side. Cause I mean, we all have to eat. And I think we all fundamentally in some capacity at this point, this point on our journey, know some of these things, mm-hmm. right? And there's different reasons why, you know, we went through yesterday, like, we don't have the time and we're just going to go the cheaper route, cheaper route from a price, but then also time perspective. But you and I talked about this when we were in that cheese shop. Like, I'm paying for that today. And you end up paying for that eventually, mm-hmm. way more than whatever your cost savings were, for a million different reasons, right? So if someone wants to actively start to make some changes with their perspective around their food and so forth, any advice on how to just kind of get started?
Mm. Yeah. I like to simplify, simplify. We overcomplicate food. We already have complex relationships with food, and it certainly doesn't help that we are being constantly marketed to, and live in an environment where we are disconnected from food. So food seems really intimidating to many. So I think number one is going back to awareness. Are you aware of what you're consuming? Are you taking some level of stock of what is going in your body? And are you being at all intentional in any way with that consumption? It may be a quick audit of your fridge or opening up some cupboards and just saying, how many of the foods in my pantry or the foods in my fridge are single ingredient whole foods? And that leads me to kind of step number two, right? Is to simplify down to eliminate. And I'm not saying we completely take these out at all costs, right? There has to be balance, but to eliminate ultra processed foods, refined sugars, and let's call them aggravants, things that you know intuitively don't really agree with you, but you might kind of just eat them anyways, right? So for a lot of people, that's like, you know, alcohol or caffeine, right? Can you limit the consumptions of just the real low-hanging fruit where you're like, you know what? I know if I eat this, I'm going to feel like a bag of shit, right? And so to bring a bit of awareness to that, and then to take a bit of an audit or a stock of what it is that you're consuming on a daily basis, trying to prioritize whole foods, single ingredient foods, done simply, prepared in a minimal amount of time. And I think that level of connection and awareness at a very baseline, just to set that as a baseline, would serve so many people. It does not need to be complicated. Eating well does not need to be complicated. You can use food and still enjoy food. You can invest in some very, very simple equipment that can produce very low cost, but nutrient dense and experience rich food. And I think that in of itself, if people could kind of just come back to the baseline of simplicity of preparation, awareness of consumption, and a baseline of single ingredient whole foods, I think that would be a beautiful start and would radically change people's lives.
Well, and there's no doubt you would feel different.
Like a superhuman. Like
it's impossible. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right. Like we always try to complicate things, but it's like, again, like I said, single ingredient. And I think the only thing I'd add to that is like, if you don't understand and you can't even pronounce the ingredients on the label, like probably not real stuff.
Super easy.
You know, it's wild.
Yeah.
And the other thing too, is just like, give yourself the self-respect. Like we're smart people. And like, this just came up the other day. I was watching something and, you know, an advertisement came on with some like Toronto Raptors for McDonald's French fries. I'm like, give me a fucking break. Like you think an elite level athlete like that, like McDonald's French fries, like they're not even potatoes. I mean, at the end of the day, and that's well known. Like it's a chemical soup of terribleness and cooked in terrible oil. Like there's nothing good, right? So, and we know this, like you think that high level athletes are just pounding back that kind of food and are able to perform like they are day in and day out. Of course not. So like, I think there's another element of like, let's just take accountability, like, and be honest with ourselves.
Yeah.
Right. You know,
this is a part that, I think a lot of people don't really like to hear, but the choice is yours. You will prioritize and you will make time and you will find resources to invest in the things that you care about. Your health is your responsibility. And when we talk about, you know, the McDonald's French fries and the, you know, advertisements on TV, we're starting to wade into the world of the systemic pressure and the systemic brokenness, essentially. We have a broken food system. We are living in a broken food system that is tied very, very closely to the largest pharmaceutical health companies and the largest food conglomerates in the world that would all much rather Mark believe that he has no time, no skill, no access, no ability to create very, very simple foods at a reasonable cost for his family, right? Mm-hmm. We live in a world that tells you are too busy to feed yourself. The most basic human skill, right? Yeah. I have a 6-month-old. I sit with a spoon and I feed him mashed up, you know, sweet potato or whatever it is. We teach our children this basic skill to feed yourself at such a young age. And then the moment that they enter the world or we enter the world, we are overwhelmed by a system that would much rather tell us that we're too busy to care about what's going in our body. So let us take care of it. Let big
food.
We'll
make it easy.
And we'll make it easy, right? We will line the aisles of the grocery stores with meals in minutes, with ultra processed food that's highly palatable, and will bring you back for more and more and more every single time. And that is where we start to get into like where the disconnect of food and our relationship with food lies. And quite honestly, to give everyone a little bit of grace before I, you know, hound you for making bad choices, it's by design.
Yeah.
And it's by design from the most powerful marketers in the world, the people that understand human psychology, and it's leveraging a vehicle that is one of the most powerful we know. Literally the thing that gives us energy and gives us life, the way that our bodies operate, the fuel that we put in the tank, right, to power us through our days. There's a broken system that has harnessed that and hijacked our relationship with that to the point where, you know, we feel like it's out of reach and it's not accessible for us to jump into the, you know, the produce aisle at the grocery store. That feels overwhelming. It's much easier to, you know, walk down the aisles and grab whatever's you know, prepared and ready to go.
Yeah. So where do you see, I mean, you're a lot of the work that you're doing, one solution, obviously, and a great step in the right direction. I mean, it's, to your point, we're up against some pretty big players in the world. But at the same time, like you said, I mean, we've got to take it, like our health is our responsibility. And everyone gets to that kind of, I think, that conclusion in their own way. But what do you see, you know, as the future of food? Like where are we headed? I mean, you don't have to make any crazy predictions, but just from a positive perspective, you know, are we moving in the right direction? Like how, and what can we do to, I guess, to help? where we exterminate ourselves, essentially.
I want to take this at a positive lens, but maybe it's helpful to just set where we are currently to then think about where we're going, right? And where we are currently is that in Canada, we have close to 50% of our population suffering from a underlying chronic disease, right? Those being heart disease, diabetes, US is absolutely, you know, higher than we are, but we're on that trend. Yeah. So that's where we are. And I think we have to see that as the pandemic it is, as the health crisis that it is. I would like to think, and I don't know if I'm speaking from an echo chamber here, but I would like to think that there is a trend of conscious consumption that is hitting the ground in families, you know, across the country, guys like yourself and my family that are asking these questions. I think that's where it begins, right? To pull us off of the baseline that we are now. I think people are asking questions about where their food comes from, how it's produced, what they're putting in their body. I think there's a rising level of awareness. But from a statistical perspective, from a numbers perspective, we still have a very long way to go. So when I think about the future of food, I certainly believe that we are using technology to incentivize locality in our food, right? To bring more local supply chains, to focus on local production of food, to think about the sustainability of food. You know, that's certainly a big one when we think about the future state of food is what's sustainable. I know this world well, being in meat production and meat consumption, right? And people asking very big questions about what's sustainable in terms of meat consumption. And so I think that level of consciousness is rising. I think we see it on a sort of a macro level, and we see these large food conglomerates, you know, a PepsiCo respond to it. Now they're responding to it in the way that they've always responded to it, being, you know, PepsiCo, if you look at their lineup, they have, you know, hierarchies of where their food falls in terms of, you know, fun for you, good for you, and better for you or something like that, right? And so you can tell that even they have recognized that there's a consumer market there that is asking for some sort of better for you alternative. Mm-hmm. Now, they're going to put their spin on it and they're going to do what they do and just market it to you as better.
Yeah.
But you know, I think about that future of food. I think we're going to continue to utilize technology to bring more enhanced supply chains that will focus on local food. I think that we're going to see more conscious consumption and awareness at a consumer level. And we have to be very clear that like the dollars you spend are a vote for the future that you want to live in, right? And so at a consumer level,
yeah, well said.
You can be a part of this solution, right? That's what you can do. You can vote for your dollars. You can shop locally. You can ask these questions of your butcher, of your, you know, produce provider, even of your grocer, you know. A lot of them may not respond with a whole lot of answers, but that can show you a little bit of where that disconnect lies. And the more that we incentivize what purchases we make and the dollars we spend, I think that's what's shaping the future of food.
Love it. Yeah. And it's all within reach. It's just, I mean, I'm biased obviously, but it all starts with the questions that we ask of ourselves and then ask of others as well, right? And just, I think, take little micro steps to being informed so we have some data and understand kind of what's going on. And then I love, you know, your take too. Like, don't just like wipe out your whole kitchen and pantry. And it's just, it's not realistic. Like, just start making some small changes. And, you know, next thing you know, you start feeling better. And then you start, okay, well, wait a second. I'm going to try this and try that and whatnot. And I mean, you guys are doing this very much so with your partners and farmers and whatnot, and you get to know the people and, you know, we do that here locally as well. You get to know the farmers, and now it's like, it's an event, you know, we go with the kids to a farm and like, you know, you see what's happening here and it's energy. I think, again, the huge part comes back to energy. And I know we're looking at growing food in labs and stuff like that, especially like alternative meats and stuff. And it just, you have to, like, I'm all for technology for like, look, we're recording with awesome technology. We wouldn't be able to record and broadcast this out. But at some point too, again, it has to come back to common sense. And like, I don't know, for me, as soon as we go against nature, usually it's not a super good outcome.
Yeah.
You know? And like, no matter what's going on, like, I just need to walk into the forest and look around and be like, wow, there's just a lot happening here that's just working in like perfect unison. And we start messing around with our food in that sense, it just seems obvious there's going to be problems, right?
So yeah. You talk about that data and starting kind of from a place of like what we know. And I think something that everyone can tune into is that you are your greatest source of data. This, and again, this comes back to accountability. It's not the message people always want to hear because we're fed convenience and mindless consumption. But it starts with you. You are your best source of information. And whether you're wearing a whoop strap or whether you just, you know, wake up saying, you know what, I don't feel great, you know, and how can I feel better? And then applying that, I think, to some sort of greater purpose. You know, to me, that was like the moment where it hit home, right? Was like, oh, when I eat better, I am healing my mental health. I'm healing my physical body. And that is being applied to all of the different hats that I wear in life. All of a sudden now I show up as a father that doesn't crash at 4 p.m. because he is sugar and caffeine, you know, depleted and has no energy to go play with his children, right? So whatever for you, whatever role, you know, you can tie that back to, using yourself as the accountability tool, and grab a buddy, do this in community, bring this into your family. Like you say, take the family to the farm. Yeah. You know, I'm listening to a podcast recently, and they were talking about the stats that I think the average American, this is a US-based study, but the average American family eats less than 30% of their meals together at a dinner table. And there is a direct correlation between the amount of meals eaten at the table together as a family unit and correlating that to the rise in chronic health conditions, specifically diabetes and obesity, right? Yeah, so exactly. If we do not inform our children and take on the accountability at a family level or an individual level, right? Mm-hmm. At an individual level, we are incentivizing diseased states, and we are perpetrating this underlying problem that we have that has been accepted as a baseline, right? There's that great quote that says something to the effect of, it's no semblance of success to be maladjusted to a sick world, right?
Yeah, it becomes the new normal.
Exactly, yeah. Right? We didn't win because all of a sudden we adjusted our society to adapt to a constant state of sickness, right? That's not a win for humanity. That's not a win for an individual. Just because I can go through my day stressed out of my brain and make it to the next moment by a quick injection of caffeine or, you know, the next sugar high does not mean that I've achieved a state of balance, right? And so I think, again, going back to the individual accountability that's available and the source of information that's held within us, that starts there, starts in your kitchen, starts at home. It takes accountability. There are small steps to be taken in order to achieve that accountability. And I'm not undermining the journey that is. I myself have personally gone through it and had to put one foot in front of the other to crawl out of, you know, some dark moments. But I think that's available to each and every one of us.
Preaching to the choir over here. I absolutely agree. This was a really important conversation. Thank you, Zach, for coming out this way. They're also bringing some beautiful meat in a little goodie bag from Northern Raised. And for everyone listening, just, you know, if you're still here and listening to, you know, at this phase in the conversation, first of all, thank you for your presence and for being here and share the love. You know, if there's something in here that really resonated with you, please share it with your friends and your crew. Tag us, of course, because we'll reshare it and whatnot. Because I think, to your point, I mean, we have to stick together to make change like this. And it's more accessible than I think a lot of us think. So conversations like this and others, like we've got to share this information because we're up against a lot of money and power basically saying the opposite message. So this is kind of the reason for the ask to let's stick together and let's create our, you know, I saw this quote, like, let's create the future that we want or accept living in someone else's, essentially. And a lot of us, I think, are defaulting to living in someone else's when it doesn't have to be like that. So thanks to all of you. Zach, where can we follow along the journey? Where can we learn more about Northern Raised? Just point the people to your work.
100%. Yeah. I love to connect personally. It's a big part of my journey is to connect personally. You can find me on Instagram. It's very simple. Zach.Langlois. So Zach.Langlois. That's an Instagram handle. And then Northern Raised. northernraised.ca. You'll find all of our social channels, the website, all the fun stuff. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you.